Tip today, in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Welcome back. Thanks very much indeed, Sarah. 1800 938 007. The text number is 083 311 3311. Now, the search is on for the 2018 Tipperary Rose of Tralee. I'm told it's open to all females between 18 and 27 who are of Irish ancestry or citizenship, be unmarried or never married, and who would like to represent County Tipperary. To tell me more about this, I'm joined in the studio now by the outgoing Tipperary Rose and Tumivara native, Sheila Ryan. Good morning to you, Sheila.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
It's lovely to see you today as well. You work in Clonmel, don't you?
I work in the mental health services in Clonmel. I'm a psychiatric nurse.
Oh, right. Yep. So tell me, first of all, before we talk about the search for the 2018 Rose, tell me about your experience of it. You were telling me you lacked confidence when you got into this first, did you?
Yeah, I suppose like any girl, early 20s, you do, I suppose, lack confidence and you doubt yourself. So I struggled, I suppose, you know, applying and that. And it wasn't for Marion Ryan, my neighbour, that suggested to me that I probably wouldn't be here talking to you, Fran. Mm. But I suppose the Rose Tralee was something in my household that was a big event when we were younger, and we would always, me and my sisters, Helen and Olive, would watch the Rose Tralee with my grandmother, and it was always something, I suppose, at the back of my mind, but it wasn't until maybe somebody outside of the family said it, you know, would you like to go for that, that I decided I would.
Yeah. And you were telling me that it was out of your comfort zone, you know, that idea of public speaking and getting out there and pushing yourself and stuff, that didn't come naturally to you at the start.
No, not at all. I had no experience public speaking. I was very nervous on the selection night, and, you know, obviously having interviews to become the Tipperary Rose, it was very daunting for me. But I suppose over the year now, I see how much I've developed, really. Mm. I've done public speaking courses and different things. So I suppose it's changed me for the better, definitely.
Has it, yeah.
Yeah.
So I presume then you would advise young women out there to get involved in this, would you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I was crowned the Tipperary Rose 2017 last April, and throughout the year I've met so much people. I've done a lot of networking, been at a lot of social events and social engagements, and I met, I suppose, so many girls from around the world. When I was in Tralee, there were 64 roses, and I've made best friends for life. And I suppose that's the main thing of the Rose of Tralee. It's all about celebrating Irish heritage and culture. And it's about, I suppose, remembering people that have left our shores years ago in search of new opportunities. And when you're watching the television, you see the American girls on, and they're talking about their great-great grandparents.
How important it is to them.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And they're all there, you know, they're all there to support their family, their heritage and their ancestors and the generations before them.
Yeah. Tell me about the whole process then. I mean, if there are particular, I'm thinking there may be mothers out there listening today saying, yeah, I'd love my daughter to be involved with that. What is the process? How do you get involved?
Yeah, so if anybody thinks that they know somebody that would be suitable to be the Tipperary Rose, I suppose all you have to do is get around them and convince them, and then apply on www.roseoftralee.com. Mm. And there will be, you can select, I suppose, where you're going to represent, if it's Tipperary or if there's someone listening that's maybe from another county or whatever.
Right.
And then after that, they will contact you. Ciarán is the coordinator, Ciarán O'Connell, and he contacts the potential Roses, and we all get together, maybe have a social night. And then there's interviews, let's say group interviews, and then there's one-to-one interviews with judges, and of course then you'll be on the stage on the selection night, which is the 31st of March, and there you'll be interviewed by the MC.
Right, and where will that be?
It was held last year in the Anner Hotel, and again it'll be this year again in the Anner Hotel. Yeah.
Right, do you need to have a sponsor ahead of time? Is that the way it works?
Well, we do have to have a sponsor that will sponsor you €250. That's just supposed to enter. And you'll wear a sash then that will advertise them, the sponsorship. Mm. Yeah.
Right, so, and you have to have that organised beforehand, have you?
Yeah, you do, yeah. Ciarán will inform all the girls, you know, once they have their application in, what the process is and what they have to do. Hmm. So, yeah.
Right, and after that then, I mean, what, you have to look after your own clothing and your hair and makeup, is that it? And
yeah, I was very fortunate now. The parish of Tumivara were very supportive towards me. And, of course, the Zipyard in Nina, they made my dress for the dome, and there was, you know, various people that helped me and sponsored me along the way, and I just want to thank them.
Mm. And there are businesses out there that would be happy to take to get involved with the young lady for this, because of course it does promote their business very effectively, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you know, we have Facebook pages and we can advertise who has sponsored us and who's, I suppose, helped us along the way. Right. So it's all social media. You can do it through social media and all like that. Yeah.
Right. So the first step, if somebody is interested in this, I presume there's a website, is there? There's that you can go onto.
Yeah. As well. So as I was saying, there, the www.roseoftralee.ie.
Right.
That's where you send in your application. Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of the requirements, well, I mean, you're a very pretty lady, and I presume that's part of it, but there's other aspects to it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I suppose a lot of people have the perception.
Personality based.
And, yeah, a lot of people do have the perception that it's the lovely girls competition, but it really isn't. You know, a lot of the girls that I met, they're very independent Irish women, and they're very, you know, not even successful, but just very, very nice girls, and pleasant girls. There's, you know, as I said, it really is just about the celebration of Irish heritage and culture, and that's really what the Rose Tralee is about. I think people get a bit confused with, you know, the lovely girls competition.
I suppose, yeah, I suppose. And people love having a go at it as well.
But, exactly.
And still it's one of the most watched television programmes of all time, you know, when you consider it. The age bracket is what?
The age bracket is 18 to 27,
I think, is it?
Yeah, 27, yeah.
Right.
That's it, yeah. So anybody in between them ages is eligible. And
How did you manage to juggle what is a very busy profession and very busy job, along with all the other bits and pieces you had to do as Rose of Tipperary?
Well, in fairness, the mental health services and people in the office, I suppose, that I work for, the HSE, they were very good, and they accommodated me with the time off, I suppose, to go to Tralee. But most of the time I just juggled it around my weekends on and weekends off, and yeah, so it was fine. I was able to manage it, and I enjoyed it so much.
And when you went to Tralee, I know you're going to tell me that it was all wonderful among the girls,
oh,
but
course.
Go on. Was there any bitching going on? Was there any? None.
No, Fran, no.
No. You've no stories.
It's very
you want
cliche.
To break here
it, is,
no,
it is very cliche, but like, you know, you're down there and you're in this thing together. You're all in it together, you know.
Yeah.
And it is a kind of an emotional roller coaster, I suppose, for me. When I wasn't selected to go on the stage, I was obviously, you know, disappointed. More
how did you feel about that?
To be honest, I was very disappointed for my family more so than me. I suppose I play sport, and I know about winning and losing, and them kind of things don't really bother me. And I'm a confident girl, and obviously I have my own qualities, and, you know, they weren't suitable for whatever they were looking for, you know. But I was disappointed for, you know, my family coming down to support me, my parents, Margaret and John, and just, you know, that kind of thing. It was, and of course, Tumivara had given me so much support.
Mm.
So it was just disappointing in that sense.
But you're saying that you wouldn't let that stop you advising any young lady to go with this. Yeah.
No, definitely not. No. Yeah. It was an experience, you know.
All right. Well, listen, it was lovely to meet you, and best of luck to you. Any other plans besides working for the HSE? Any other?
I do, I suppose, a bit of volunteer working with Pieta House. I suppose mental health is something that's important to me, so I hope to continue promoting it, you know, and raising awareness around mental health in the future. So that's really it. You know.
All right, Sheila, lovely to talk to you today, and thanks, thanks very much indeed. That is Sheila Ryan from Tumivara, and Sheila is the outgoing Tipperary Rose. 1800 938 007.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1800 938 007.
007.
Welcome back to Tip Today. It's time for the Friday panel. And let me introduce our panel to you. Kieran Cleary is with me. And Kieran, of course, is a well-known solicitor. Katrina Morrissey is deputy editor of the Irish Farmers Journal. And Paul McCarthy, I suppose, best known to you from a conversation that we had recently about his electric car. So you're all extremely welcome. And thanks very much for joining us today. We're going to begin with something that caused quite a bit of controversy during the week when we were speaking about the call to arms by Councillor David Doran. Is it really viable that people should be allowed to arm themselves with guns in the wake of violent break-ins? Now, Kieran, can I talk to you? Because, of course, you're very familiar indeed with the tragedy of what can happen when people break into properties and the fallout of families.
Oh, absolutely, Fran. I was in your studio here 3 years ago following the most dreadful attack on the South Tipperary family, and subsequently seven of the nine criminals got nearly 20 years each in prison. And this has happened around the country. But the association, which I'm president of, we go to wherever there's been a tragedy. And the exact same thing happens every time. The local councillors, the TD, the priest, they all come around and they all sympathise. And they're wonderful. Then prime time arrive and they interview everybody. And everybody says, something must be done. Something must be done. And then another tragedy happens and the same thing occurs. Our association have been trying to get the Minister for Justice to amend the bail laws that any criminal who is charged with a similar offence will be tagged. And the tagging is monitoring the movements of them. You put it on the ankle, it's like a watch, it's a GPS system. And the problem is we're now on our third Minister for Justice. We cannot get continuity. But I do know from the association, the members are all in rural areas, they're all really concerned about what's happening and they're going to protect themselves. They're talking about guns and they're talking about buying guns.
And tell me about that, Kieran, because you've spent most of your life, I mean, you know, upholding the law and I suppose to some degree making sure other people uphold the law as well. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? I mean, and the dangers of that?
There are dangers in it, but the other side of the coin, you're entitled to protect yourself in your home. It is your home. And this thing, people say, oh, you'll be sued. You will not be sued. You must protect your home. You must protect your family. And if it takes guns to do it, I certainly would never have thought at this stage of my life I would support that, but I'm very much in favour of now. I can see how it works. I know a good number of people who have got guns and bought them in the recent years, and they use them, but it frightens people off, no question whatsoever.
From a legal point of view, if I'm in my home, I have a legal firearm with me, somebody enters my property with a view to robbing stuff or whatever, if I kill or harm that person, are you saying to me that I can't be
held up? Of course
you
will be charged. Of course you will be. But the other side of the coin, and a friend of mine said to me, Kieran, he said, it's better to be tried by 12 people than carried by six. And that is right. That is what happens. That's how people get killed in their homes. And you must defend your home. You're entitled to defend your home. I do know of a good number of instances where there haven't been fatalities, but intruders have been struck. They've vanished. There'd be no complaints. There's been no Gardaí.
It's interesting, isn't it? Can I ask your opinion on this, Katrina? Because, of course, Deputy Editor of the Irish Farmers Journal, you have your fingers on the pulse of what's happening out there in the farming communities, and it's largely the rural farming communities we're talking about here, isn't it?
It is, unfortunately. It's a story that we write all too often. You know, an elderly or vulnerable person is subject to an attack or a burglary. In their own home, there are an awful lot of people out there who are very, very concerned, and some who do live in fear if they live in remote areas or are vulnerable in any way, whether that's by age or circumstance. So it's a huge issue for rural dwellers and farmers in particular, because they will also have valuable equipment and things like that on their property. I suppose I'm torn between Kieran's point of view, which I know the members of my family would be very strongly against, that you are very strongly for, that you should be able to defend yourself. But I do wonder, is there could it lead to an escalation in the type of crime that then would happen? because if everybody did have or was known to have a gun in the house, would that then make the person who's determined to enter the house, you know, a more dangerous
right, so
force?
Guns beget guns. Is that what it is? The other small worry that, well, it's a large worry that I have as well, is that if somebody does brandish a gun, these are young guys, they're athletic guys, they're, and if they take that gun, does it turn into something else than something more?
That would be my fear, as you say, yeah. The escalation and the possibility that those guns would maybe become a target for the theft itself. If someone is known to keep a gun in the house, that, you know, is that the reason for them to break in? I think, to be honest though, my opinion would be that if there were tougher sanctions on people for those minor offences so that you don't get the repeat offenders, you know, the more hardened criminals coming back out time and time again. I think if there was, you know, there's just, if there were more prosecutions, fewer people out on bail. We hear so often about repeat offenders. You know, someone who was charged for a burglary has a string of burglaries before that. To me, they shouldn't be out and about right. in order to commit that second.
Kieran, my
offense.
Understanding is that there's legislation on the table that just needs to be signed off on. Is that right?
We've been through this in this interview in this studio also. The legislation is in place, but it has not been implemented, and we don't know why. I have been to the Department of Justice with the association three times in the last year, and on each occasion the minister said it's the legislation is in place, but it hasn't been activated. My colleague here is absolutely right. It's bail is the problem. Absolutely. If you're on bail and you commit five crimes, you'll get the same sentence as if you committed one. And that is why it's on bail. Bail is the... If that was controlled and monitored properly...
Right. And before I go to Paul, when will you compare that to the legal structures in another country? Like let's take the UK, for example. Is that totally different?
It's totally... They have a monitoring service in UK, but the brilliant one is in the Netherlands, where they had a rampant crime there about 5 years ago. They brought in tagging, and they're now hiring out jail space.
Wow.
They're hiring out to other European countries jail space. And
so
the crime
works.
Is dropped dramatically.
So this works?
It works. It's there. We've proved it to the Department of Justice. They still won't use it.
Paul McCarthy. Paul, your thoughts on this, Paul?
Well, I kind of fall between two stools here, Fran. Listening to Kieran and Katrina, I'm struck by the fact that to keep on doing the same thing and expect a different result is madness. If you look across the world at where there are easy access to firearms, the answer is don't go there. I don't think increasing arming people in rural homes is the answer, because what you're really doing is blazing away, not at the criminals necessarily, you're blazing away at your fear. It's kind of placing you notionally in a more secure place if you've got a shotgun or some other weapon handy. But there are all sorts of problems that arise from it. Kieran's notion of the tagging has a corollary, I think. I can see in these days where you have modern IT, I can see no reason why, if you were living in a rural area and you were worried, you couldn't wear a wristband. Pressing the wristband, if you were worried, would send a signal to the local Garda station, who would immediately come. I think the assault, the aggravated burglary in Burnchurch in Killinall that Kieran handled, the lady of the house left her mobile phone on, and that was what she A, managed to get the signal out there, and B, the guards could hear what was going on.
But the only point I'd say about that is that with the closure of the rural police stations now, that sometimes the Garda stations are so far away from
you,
and they have so many incidents to cover with that.
Well, I'll give you an analogy. One of my daughters lives in Western Australia, was out in the wilderness. They had an accident in the Jeep, but they had a satellite transmitter.
Yes.
And all they had to do was press this satellite transmitter. It cost them $200 Australian. And the emergency services knew where they were exactly and could come out to them. And there's no reason we couldn't do that here. If I go to Jimmy's house and I'm late and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, I do not want to get buckshot through the front door.
Right, and that's what we discussed during the week as well. One guy told us about an incident that he had where he went to a door and he was greeted by a rifle, in fact, coming out the door with no sign of a person.
If you look at the armed response unit, they are highly trained individuals. To put those or similar weapons in the hands of people who are not highly trained, I think is disastrous. Right.
But even the fact that we're speaking about it, Kieran, though, is a sense of the desperation, isn't it?
Absolutely. I agree with Paul have said there. I know the system he's talking about on your wristwatch, but you're so right. The Garda stations are not open.
No.
There's nobody there to ring. There's nobody there at 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour later. The thieves are gone. But there is desperation. Absolutely. I mean, I talk about normal, happy people of a certain age group who would never, ever dream of doing what I'm suggesting. And it's they're suggesting it. They are going to protect themselves. And that's desperation to have to do that.
Yeah.
But it's your home. You're entitled to defend your home.
Yeah. We were speaking about the farming community being particularly hit on, Katrina, with several of them coming on the show and telling me that time after time they've been robbed. Like, it's not just one incident. Collectively, is there any talk about stuff that they're going to do collectively?
I suppose farmers are very involved in the community alert schemes already. You'll find that a large proportion of the members of those schemes will be farmers. They're out and about, they're on tractors, they're, you know, going particular routes every day. They're very, very good to spot something out of the ordinary. They're also often, if they're in the tractor, up high, so they might see something that a car or a walker maybe wouldn't. So I think farmers are helping in that way and helping themselves and helping neighbours in that way. I suppose I'd love to go back to what the guys are saying there as regards technology and the Gardaí being resourced to be able to come out if they were called. I think if there was a fraction of the money spent on local Garda stations and technology like that, that is spent on giving free legal aid to repeat offenders, you know, that would make a huge difference. I'd hate to think how many millions are spent every year on free legal aid for people who have repeatedly gone and committed crimes while on bail.
Right. The whole business of free legal aid, Kieran, is thrown around all the time. But, I mean, free legal aid is required in an awful lot of cases, in fairness to it, isn't it?
I think legal aid should be made available, but not free. Nothing in life should be free. So if you say your case costs 10,000, I feel that the accused should, for the next 10 years, pay back that sum of money, or a large portion of it. It can be taken by the revenue out of your social welfare, or the revenue, all they want is your PPS number. I think the free aspect has to go, but legal aid should be available.
Mm.
The other item, it's slightly different from this, but the Garda stations and the lack of money. We have found out through our association that the fines imposed by the district court in County Tipperary, these are standard fines, are not being collected by the guards because they can't. And there's €1 million in unclaimed fines in Tipperary. Well, 1 million.
Is that because of resources with the Garda?
Because resources and the way it's done. The guard prosecutes Katrina. She goes to court. She's fined. Another guard calls to her house looking for the fine. He's never met her. He doesn't know what she looks like. So he never gets it. They should take it at source, and then there will be vast sums of money available for Garda stations. I think there's over 30 million owed in the country.
All right.
Well, in Tipperary alone, which is a very law-abiding county.
And just a final question on this. The legislation that is being held up, it's already in prepared there. Why isn't there an appetite to do that?
Because I don't know.
Any politician that would put that in place would be getting a collective round of applause from
absolutely.
Rural Ireland.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we have spoken at great length to the five politicians in Tipperary, and each supported us. But nothing came of it. And I agree completely. We're looking really for a young politician who will take this on as their crusade. And they will be there forever, because everybody has the same problem. I don't know why, man. I just baffles me.
Paul, do you think, is this part of this almost a blind side with some aspects of the government to rural Ireland?
Quite possibly. If you look at the demography of the country, most people live in cities. Very few people live. There aren't many votes in the rural population. So you're going to appeal to those who live in high urban densities. The issue there is rural crime any more troublesome in terms of the victim than urban crime? And I don't know if it is or not. I have been burgled. I've had my car stolen. I've had poultry taken from a hen house. I must be the only man in Tipperary with an alarm on his hen house. And I can't see that there's ever going to be, other than the same old, trotted out, year in, year out, until we treat this seriously. And there are, to me, there are three aspects to criminal behaviour. One is exactly what we're talking about here, how to protect yourself. And that's pretty well covered. The second is, how do you stop youngsters getting involved in crime? And the third is, for the guys and ladies who are caught, and the men that attacked the family in Burnchurch got 20 years. Well, are they just going to do 20 years doing the crossword? Or are they actually going to be, I don't know, the word rehabilitated comes to mind, but you know what I mean. Is there any active, positive step going to be taken with those individuals to redeem
their behaviour? Well, to begin with, they won't do 20 years, exactly. Will they?
Well, they will do 15.
Will they?
And I have been into all the prisons in this country visiting, thank goodness. But we were with the governor of Mountjoy Prison 2 years ago and the minister in charge of prisons. And we went into a cell and individually and they locked the door. I tell you, it was frightening. It is, and it deserves it so, but it is horrific. To not know that from 5 o'clock in the evening you cannot move out of that square room until the morning. It's horrific. Now, they deserve it, and that's the way it should be.
Mm.
But to serve 15 years, it's incredible.
Yeah, but it's not stopping them, you know?
No, it's not stopping them. No. It's getting worse. There's no question of that. I'm in the fourth generation of criminals in Tipperary, and they're all from the same families, and they'll never change. Never.
And because Paul brought it up about, is it education? Is it, what is it?
It's greed. Just greed. Simple the one for you have, and I won't work for it.
And do they? What's their mentality on that? Do they feel entitled to that?
There's a degree of that, definitely. And it's one-upmanship. If you have an e-car, I want to have one. You have money, I want it. No, there's a lack of ability to work, no understanding, but it's pure greed. And it's some wonderful families come from a very difficult background, and some wonderful people can come out of a difficult family. You can actually get a seriously good person out of it, and then you can have 5 or 6 in that family will be criminals. So I don't know why, friend. If we knew that, we wouldn't have the problem.
It's fascinating, though, isn't it? Katrina, we can't help but speak about this, and for it to veer off into just rural Ireland, it seems to be so forgotten by so much of what the government is doing. We're looking at that 2040 plan now that could really be very troublesome for small towns in Tipperary and the likes. How is the farming community feeling about that? Are they feeling like the forgotten people in Ireland?
I think so. I suppose farming is being forgotten on a number of levels. The rural planning and families being able to live locally is a huge issue for farmers. But they're also, they feel left behind on much bigger issues. At the moment, farmers are looking at the Mercosur negotiations happening, where there's potentially many multiples of the Irish beef industry being brought in from South America with no equivalent of standards. There are a lot of places that farmers feel that they are being left down by politicians, unfortunately,
Can I ask you about Step Aside? Because I'm just very interested in that. The whole Shane Ross thing there and the parish pump politics of that. And what is thought of that?
Well, I think it's appalling.
Do you think
absolutely. Well, I was on Marion Finucane's show one Saturday morning with Shane Ross long before that. And I thought he was a very honourable man. I listened very closely. Sure, he's just a stroke politics at the highest level.
Yeah. After all, he's writing over the years where he attacked it.
Exactly. It's what he's saying about Michael Healy-Ray, he's doing himself.
Yeah.
I think it's wrong. I really do. And Step Aside is a pleasant area enough. We need Garda. Every village wants its Garda station.
Right.
And everyone has the same priority.
But a hierarchy of needs, Step Aside would be fairly down there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even the guards don't. There's no necessity to go there. There's no urgency on it.
That's incredible. What do you think about that, Paul? Is that sort of parish pump? Is that old stroke politics?
We're cursed with parish pump politics, in my opinion. This needs a helicopter view. This needs somebody to say, what is the problem and how are we going to fix it? And to say that we need more guards on the beat, walking the beat or on bicycles, physical presence, I don't think that's the solution. I think rural stations need guardie, so that if they do have an emergency, they can access that emergency quickly. And that is a deterrent to a criminal. But the notion of parish pump politics, we could have another hour on this. if you look at the health service, we have a mirror of the justice system. It just needs somebody to come in and say, this isn't right, that isn't right. We cannot keep doing the same old thing. We have to change something.
All right, will you stay with me, guys? Thanks very much indeed. We're going to take a break and we're back with a different subject with our panel of Kieran, Katrina and Paul. It's 11:34 right now. Back in a moment.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Now, you're very welcome back to Tip Today. Deputy Matthew McGrath was in touch to say that he raised the tagging issue with Minister Flanagan in the Dáil last Tuesday. Now, I'm not sure what the outcome of that is going to be or whether there was any outcome to it, but let's see what the story is. A passive nation, that's our next topic. There are currently various different protests taking place, as you know. Concerned about the roads, there was a big protest up in Terry Glass there during the week. Teachers' pay protest yesterday at lunchtime over that. But what about, as a nation, are we passive? I mean, and again, I'm looking towards the French, I suppose, and how they take to the roads and take to the streets and one thing and another. Can I start with you on this, Katrina? Because, of course, one of the most famous protests was in the 1960s with the farmers when all the tractors headed towards Leinster House. But are we passive as a nation, do you think?
I think we are passive as a nation. I think Irish people are, in general, despite our previous conversation, quite law-abiding. We don't really like confrontation. We will abide by the authority that's there in the main. As you say, there have been some significant farming protests in recent years. The biggest one was in 1966, where they marched to Dublin and occupied the steps of government buildings. I suppose
Hawley was the man then, wasn't he?
That's
was
right. He was Minister for Agriculture at the time, and he'd refused to meet with farmers. And in the end, he had to back down. And that was, you know, the birth of what is now the IFA, I suppose.
Right.
In more recent years, you had the tractorcade in 2003. Where there were 300 tractors brought into city centre Dublin. And I suppose the thing to take from that and the intervening years was the 1966 protest march was very much agriculture was at the centre of the economy at that time. Whereas in 2003, obviously, you've had the growth of the IT, the pharmaceutical, all those other industries, construction. So farming is no longer it is a central part of the economy, but it's not the centre.
Mm.
What made the IFA protest in 2003 so visible was the fact that it stopped traffic in Dublin city centre.
Right.
So,
but it didn't have the same effect that the one from 66 did on Charlie and the department at that point.
No, I think that one will go down in history, yeah, I think, the 1966 one. And there's been a change as well, I suppose, in farming politics when the farming organisations were brought in as social partners. So they're not as adversarial as they would have used to, you know, the organisations and government when they were brought on as social partners. It would have somewhat brought in the partnership element and maybe taken the sting out of the more adversarial side.
But does it need to go back to something more adversarial, do you think? Does it need to?
It's very hard to say. I think at the minute, the protest and the visibility has changed for me in recent years. The battle is nearly now moved on to social media in some ways. You know, it's no longer so much about getting the front page of the newspaper. It can, you know, to sway opinion on social media is quite a big coup for anybody these days. You'll see farmers doing that. You'll see.
But does it affect change?
I think it can do. I think it can do. One example would be recently the glyphosate debate, which was the chemical Roundup, the brand name Roundup in Europe. That was very much an online phenomenon of citizens across Europe. They gathered 1 million signatures, which forced the European Commission and Parliament to debate something that they wouldn't have had to do before the petition was signed.
So it can have a weight. Paul, your thoughts on that? Are we passive as a nation? Do we need
fairly passive, Fran?
Do we need to get out on the streets more?
We do, because unless you up the ante and become a little adversarial, people won't take you seriously.
Yeah.
People will not. And I have personal experience of that. And I'm interested in Katrina's comments there. The social media front is important. In this country, there's an organization called uplift.ie. In the UK, there's 38 Degrees. Internationally, there's an organization called Avaaz. And all those three organizations campaign on popular fronts to improve the condition of people who would otherwise be voiceless. And it's vital. Personally, yes, upping the ante does work. Years ago, in the early 2000s, the local authority had fed in water from Killarney. There's a big tank on the mountain on Shusamon. And there were all sorts of problems with it. And I got wind of a lady in Kilsheelan, Miriam, can't remember her family name, but she runs the post office with her husband. And I joined this meeting in Kilsheelan Hall, and a committee was formed. And from that, because I have a chemistry background, my neighbour Eamon is a department vet, we attended, and what we heard from the local authority, not from the councillors, but from the executive in the local authority, the pensioned, staffed people who don't get elected, what we heard from them was horrifying. And at one point, I asked the guy, I won't give his name, obviously, asked the guy to repeat what he said. And he said, we don't operate the legal limit on E. coli in drinking water. This was an Irish statute and an EU statute because it's not practical. And he repeated it. And when I left that meeting, I had a word with the then town clerk and I said, all your delicate bits are on the line. You have to fix this. And you know what happened? We got it fixed. But all that happened was we jumped up the queue. We went from really low down, and I apologise to the people in Burn Court, we just leapfrogged to the top of the list because now we had a stick to beat them with. Now we were, excuse the expression, bums on seats.
Yeah.
Now the local politicians were involved, and it went so like quicksilver.
It does work. Kieran, what do you think about this? Well, Passive as a nation?
I'm a student of the 60s, a university student of the 60s, when there was lots of protests, and very successful protests. And I'm astonished that we have huge numbers of people in university and third level that they're not protesting. Why are they not protesting on behalf of those who can't protest? And that is education. That is university education. Mm. And with the forthcoming referendum on abortion, they should be protesting on behalf of the unborn or whatever their view
or whatever,
is.
Yeah.
They should form a view. We never see students protesting.
I find with a lot of them, there's an apathy about politics. They don't even know about basic stuff that's happening in politics, you know?
But it can. Protests can, if you remember, only about 4 years ago when the government decided to abolish medical card holder for those over 65. I mean, the trains and buses were full. And they protested in Dublin, and some clergyman opened his church because they could go in and speak. And they changed the whole thing.
Yeah. There are a lot of votes in that, though, Kieran.
But they did it.
Right.
You know, if you protest properly and with dignity and respect... Yes. You will succeed.
Is that what we need to do?
Well,
the legislation we were talking about is concerned, is that what we need to do?
People need to get out and do it. Not for the sake of just protesting. But if you have a passion and you have a belief, you will get support.
Mm.
But you must bring the people with you. And there's no point criticising the government. Mm. You have to pinpoint what is your complaint.
Yeah. But for that, we need leaders for that.
You do. That's the thing. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly the... You need a leader who will be knocked by everybody. Yeah. Who does he or who does she think she is?
Yeah. Right. Prepared.
That's the first to be attacked.
Yeah.
And her Uncle Jimmy was whatever. That's the first thing will happen.
Right.
But if you have the leadership ability and you have a belief, you will get followers and you will achieve it.
All right, let me take another break. We're back with our final item and the panel in just a few moments.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Welcome back to TIP Today. Friday panel, Kieran Cleary is with me, Katrina Murphy and Paul... Katrina Morrissey, it is. It was Murphy, wasn't
That's
it,
right.
Katrina? And Paul McCarthy is with me as well. Before we go any further, you want to say hello? And you want
Buttermarket restaurant in Market Street in Clonmel, today is their second anniversary, and I'm one of their inmates. I love it. I absolutely love it. The staff are beautifully dressed, their courtesy, and they engage with the customers, and I wish, and on behalf of all the customers, a happy anniversary.
Very good. Is that the stone building?
Beautiful stone building
there. All right. Well done indeed. We're going to talk about venerating the saints. Now, yesterday was St. Bridget's Day, and I'm wondering how many people knew or how many people cared, and do you have a saint that you venerate? Well, our Trudy was out and about with the people of Tipperary, and this is what they think about their saints.
I'm a fisherman, and every fisherman leaves his fishing rod out on the night before St. Bridget's Day.
Why do you do that?
You leave it out to be blessed by St. Bridget. So you catch more fish.
And has it proved very lucky?
Generally it does.
Any other saints? Maybe St. Jude if it's a bad day's fishing?
Not really, no. St. Bridget's the only one now that we have plenty of, I suppose, confidence in.
I would ask him for favours now and again, yeah.
Any particular favourites?
No, depends on the position, I suppose. I'm near relatives as well, great to them as well. They help me as well. My mother helps me find things, so maybe she's a saint as well.
They tell the people worship the saints still. I go regular to all the saints' masses on the day.
And would you have any particular favourite?
Oh, so St. Bridget is one of them. She's one of them. She's just the patron saint of the parish I live in, St. Patrick. Actually, he's the patron saint of Ireland, isn't he? For feast day, we enjoy the day with.
Do you get solace from them? Do you get something from them?
Well, I go to Mass fairly regular. I go to Mass 2 or 3 times a week. Probably one of the last of the diehards doing it, but I just believe in the bit of faith. That's what we have going through life.
I put up my ribbon last night. I pushed on the handle of the back door, and I have it now stuck into St. Bridget's Cross.
And what does the ribbon signify?
Well, I suppose it is kind of old Irish faith in our women, especially. And I suppose just tradition. We always had it at home. Now, whether it works or not, we don't know. You know, whether you'd have a sore throat or a pain in your head, St. Bridget's ribbon. But I suppose it's our own tradition and our own faith.
What other saints would you venerate, would you?
Oh, yes, St. Anthony. He's my man. I owe him a lot of money. If I lose something and I'd be giving out to him and saying, oh, you have to leave me down now, I can't find the glasses or I can't find this or, you know. But yeah, St. Anthony, you normally find it then. That's about it, really. Yeah.
What about the Child of Prague? Is that a bit of an odd custom?
Oh, yes, only if we have a wedding in the family. And I have that Child of Prague at home as well.
And does it still have its head?
No, well, I have a head, but the head has gone off of it.
What is that?
I don't know, I have no idea. None whatsoever. You have to have the Child of Prague and you have to have with no head. But actually, I have the head. But people leave it out the night before of the following day for a wedding. Hopefully, the day will be fine. And we had a lovely day last September. My baby was married. And we had a fantastic day. And the sun was shining. So I leave that down to another saint.
I always get the cross, you know, the St. Bridget's cross. I used to make them, but I can't get wreath anymore. It's just a special day, I think, isn't it, you know?
Because you're named Bridget, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a tradition too, a lot of it, you know. And of course, you know, your St. Bridget's ribbon, you put it out the night before, but I forgot it last night. It's the last thing I thought about when I was going in home, and I never thought of doing it. St. Anthony is my favourite. He surely is. He's after finding loads of things for me that I lost.
No. Does it work?
It works for me. Each to their own. That's my opinion of it. You know what I mean? But, you know, if you think about it, like, when you're in trouble, you always say to, well, I pray to somebody. So he always seems to work for me. He's my favourite.
There you go. That's the thoughts of the people of Carrick and Shure, in fact, speaking to Trudy yesterday. Much smiling around the table on that. Paul, do you want to take that first? The saints, do they mean anything to you?
Yes. I'm of an age when I remember staying with my cousins and my Aunt Eileen would send us to the cinema, and on the way down you might lose 2 shillings and you'd come home in tears and everybody down on their knees to St. Anthony. Success rate moderate, I suppose. Most things turn up anyway, whether you pray to your patron saint or not. The other one was St. Jude, being a little disinclined, I suppose, to study for exams. He was the man the night before. He has a very poor success rate.
Yes. Was he the patron saint of hopeless cases?
Yes. Yeah,
that
yes.
I doubt you were a hopeless case. Now, Katrina, what about you on this?
Yeah, I mean, I would, of the saints that I would know and be familiar with, a lot of them have been mentioned there. Obviously, St. Bridget yesterday and the crosses, we all made them in school, and certainly something that the farming community would latch on to as well. Jude for the hopeless cases, Anthony when I've lost my flipping mobile phone again, or the keys. Francis is one, I suppose, as the patron saint of animals. And I have the medal in the car for Saint Anthony on the, isn't he the patron saint of travellers?
That's interesting, isn't it? So you would have that in the car. Why would you have that in the car now?
I think I got it from my father or my mother. And did you? You know, when I got my first car, and it's transferred then from car to Jeep and so on. So yeah, there are a couple of things that we would do as well, and I'm not sure have they particularly Catholic origins. The May Eve, we go out and put holy water in the corners of the field on May Eve.
Well, there's a pagan element.
There's a pagan element to that. Yeah.
But of course, Christianity like took an awful lot of these pagan things and sort of glossed them off and fixed them up.
Polished them up and put them on the straight and narrow.
Made them Christian in some way. What about yourself on this, Kieran?
Well, I find it's a complete load of nonsense. I absolutely. I can't believe that adult people are having an adult discussion about us. When you think walking around the field, flicking water, I mean, you should be locked up for that kind of behaviour. I've watched it for years. But, there's always a but. I know a lot of people who got very ill, dangerously ill, and that's a huge comfort. It really is a comfort.
You mean a faith
a faith that something might get me through this issue, particularly a young mother with family. The children need her, and then you have to say, yes, that's their belief,
right.
That's their faith, and they're absolutely entitled to it. The fact I don't believe in it is rubbish. You know,
right.
That's
so if you lose your mobile phone or your glasses...
Not at all, I go off and buy another one. Or I ring it, whatever. No, I would never, ever...
Right, so you won't be troubling St. Anthony.
No, I wouldn't trouble anybody like that. No, I'm actually, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it
something that's going away, though, Katrina? Is it?
I think it is probably something that's been eroded over time in some cases because business no longer recognises some of the days, you know, the 8th of December.
Oh, of course. Yes.
You know, the fact that we work through some of these days, that there isn't a particular day that you go to Mass, you know, I think there is an erosion of it there. And also, I would think it's probably not being taught in schools or so much at Mass.
I don't even see the statues in the same way that they used to be on this. Is it not something sweet and sort of nice about it, though? Or am I just an old romantic?
No, I think there is a place for... people connecting with their spiritual side. And people do it in different ways, different religions, different faith groups. You could sing in the bath and come out feeling better. Now, whether that's spiritual or not, I don't know. But you, by doing something to connect you to your spiritual side, you do get, I mean, your interviewer called it, do you get solace from that? And I think people do.
That's okay.
That's fine. You could worship a bicycle frame up a tree if you wanted to. If that connected you more closely...
I'm worried the way your mind works that you can...
Well, maybe that's a...
Bicycle frame up a tree.
Okay. It goes back a long time, long... That's another story again. But if you found a symbol...
Right.
...that you could appeal to, that connected you with your spiritual nature, and it worked for you, and you got some solace or reward... then people will do it.
All right, Katrina, I have poor enough news for you. Seemingly, you have the wrong saint in the car. It's Saint Christopher for travels. So you need to
change. But if you ever lose your car,
check it straight away.
When you can't find the car in the car park, Katrina, that's what it's for.
That's
what it is. That's a wonderful panel today. Thank you so much indeed to Kieran Cleary, to Katrina Murphy, and to Paul McCarthy. That's it from me. I keep saying your maiden name. I beg your pardon, Katrina. It's Katrina Morrissey. Thanks very much to Ali, who produced today. Owen is on the way, and I'll talk to you on Monday. Enjoy the weekend. Bye-bye.